It's time for the PowerMizzou.com podcast with interviews and analysis of your Missouri Tigers. Now, here's your host, Gabe DeArmond.
All right, welcome back to another week of the PowerMizzou.com podcast. And I'm going to warn you right now, it's Thursday afternoon. It's been, 4 days since the Michael Sam story broke, and we're going to talk about it some more. So if you've got fatigue, you know what? Don't listen for a couple minutes. Fast forward. We're going to get to other stuff. We're going to talk basketball. We're going to talk other NFL players. But we are going to talk about the Michael Sam story a little bit. And we're going to start with Eric Edholm, NFL writer from Shutdown Corner on Yahoo Sports. Eric, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. First thing, before we get into any specifics, two basic questions. On Sunday morning, where would you have said Michael Sam fits as a draft prospect in the NFL? What round, what range?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know, you and I obviously talked during Senior Bowl week. I was down in Mobile and got a chance to watch some of the prospects. And, you know, I sent out a tweet that week that said something like, Michael Sam's not a linebacker yet. And I don't know, me taking a step forward, I don't know if he'll ever be one. I mean, he's kind of that tweener guy. Not real tall, maybe not the longest arms, and the weight kind of puts him somewhere between a down lineman and a stand-up linebacker, depending on the scheme. But, yeah, so he's in sort of a tough fit there, physically speaking. And I remember thinking, with the lack of variety in his pass rush moves, even with a high motor and, good character, I probably would have put him somewhere in the fourth or fifth round. I'm trying not to let other things sway my take on that. I kind of felt like that's the kind of player I saw in Mobile, and there were stretches where he disappeared this year.
That's what I wanted to ask next then, obviously. That was your take Sunday morning. Monday morning, where would you put Michael Sam as an NFL draft prospect?
You know, I was on vacation last week, and I didn't put out a ton of calls. It wasn't like the team of SI writers who are, asking every scout from here to the corners of the universe where he might go. And yet the sense I get is that I think the majority of the teams out there still will grade him as a football player first. Are there some teams who are kind of stuck in the dark ages of thinking or maybe have had a bad public relations go of it, like the Cleveland Browns or a team like that, where, they feel like they need as few questions as possible, even if Michael Sam's sexuality to me is not a question. Yeah, could I see a team like that avoiding him? Sure, absolutely. And that's unfortunate, but that's the way, this league is sort of based. So I don't feel like it's going to affect his draft status all that much when it's all said and done. We've got 2.5 months of this speculation left.
Right.
He's going to be by next week. He's going to talk. I think the subject's going to be a little old by that time. And I think he will get a grade as a football player, and that's how he'll be drafted.
You mentioned maybe Cleveland is a place that might shy away, just as an example, obviously. But, I heard a lot of people say immediately Monday, Tuesday, he needs to go somewhere with strong leadership, New England, San Francisco, blah, blah, blah. And then I heard a real interesting take. I was listening to some NFL guys this morning, and they said, that's what we'd say about any player. I mean, you want any player to go to an organization with good leadership that's strong and confident in their guys and going to back up their guys. So, I mean, really what we're saying about Michael Sam, you want him to go to the same organization you probably want any of your clients to go to if you're an agent.
Absolutely, right. I mean, if he gets drafted, let's say, by the Seattle Seahawks, is anybody going to say that, they're really – come on. I mean, that's a great place to land for any player, I would think, especially one that utilizes the defensive lineman like that. And, or what about, for instance, I'll just throw a team out there, the Arizona Cardinals. They have some players – who have, over the past few years, a similar size. They've had some guys on the roster who kind of fit that 6'1", 260-pound rusher. Now, not all of them have been successful, but look what John Abraham did last year. Sam Nacho is somebody who could be replaced. That's a place with a head coach who did a remarkable job last season. They have a group of talent around them. If he went there, would we say, Sam's not in a great place? That'd be a perfectly fine place for him to land. Or the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, I look at the Ravens, and that's the kind of team that looks at production in college, especially from a pass rush standpoint, and says, all right, this is too good to overlook. You can't ignore this. So those are a few teams that just sort of popped into my head immediately afterwards, especially the Cardinals and Ravens, that maybe other people weren't talking about, but I think would be good fits for them.
talking with Eric Edholm, NFL writer on Shutdown Corner. And Eric, just a couple more on Sam. You know, you wrote a piece from the Senior Bowl and talking to scouts that scout had mentioned a character issue possibly with Sam. And then I read your take after he came out. I thought it was fascinating, you know, that this is put under the umbrella of character issues. It just kind of, for people who maybe didn't see that, kind of expand a little bit on what you wrote about that and what you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously crossed a little bit of a delicate, territory here. But, yeah, I had heard from a personnel director that he wanted to double check or double back. I can't remember the exact phrase he used, but he wanted to sort of go back and look into some character things. And that was how he described it to me. And, you know, as a Missouri alum and somebody who follows the program and still has some friends and connections in Columbia, I was shocked by this. I thought, boy, I have heard nothing but great things about Michael Sam's character. You know, maybe there is something that could surprise us. And obviously I was not thinking about his sexuality. That was not what came into my mind. So it's how NFL teams characterize these things. They use the term character as an all-encompassing umbrella. In the same way that, let's say, the former Vikings punter Chris Flewey was a controversial guy, is he a bad dude? No, but the Vikings didn't want to deal with him. He had too many outspoken moments, and they said, you know what, punters are a dime a dozen, let's go find another one. That's how a lot of NFL teams approach quote-unquote character. So that's why I do feel there may be some teams that aren't going to be interested in Michael Sam, unfortunately. But there are enough teams out there that can look past that sort of thing that are more interested in getting good football players on the roster that I think will judge him fairly. So that's how I would sort of wrap up that little conversation about character, because as we all know, I mean, Michael Sam is a leader that the coaches depended on, and it showed in his play on the field, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, maybe not want to deal with him. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, just the circus, the media, the distractions, and NFL teams don't want to deal with that. I mean, is that really an issue? Can these guys really not take doing an interview about what they think about Michael Sam? Is that an issue for NFL teams?
Well, I think, you know, Andrew Brand of MQB and SI did a great job of sort of outlining, and he's got experience on both ends of the coin as an agent and also on the player personnel side, the front office side, where he said, look, you know, is Tim Tebow worth a roster spot, you know, on an NFL roster for a developmental quarterback? Yes, he probably is. Is Terrell Owens better than some number three, two and three wide receivers in the NFL, Chad Ochocinco? Yes. But there are people out there who just don't want those guys on their roster. Now, again, I'm not putting Michael Sam in the, you know, the same. I mean, Tim Tebow's character is off the charts. So we can sort of say it's the same type of thing, that the media are going to follow this guy wherever he goes, whether it's, you know, a job with ESPN or whether it's the CFL, you know. So the thinking is that whoever drafts Michael Sam, there will be a flock of media that follows and asks them, so you're in Arizona now, what's it like? You know, I don't know what they'll ask him, but that's unfortunately what some teams just don't want to deal with, and that mandate may come down on the front office and their scouting staff.
Last one, it was Sam, and we'll move on to the other players, but you mentioned you're a Mizzou guy, just not your job, not professionally, anything like that, as much or as little as you're comfortable sharing. When you read the story or saw the interview Sunday night, what was your reaction?
Well, I was very proud of him for coming forward and then facing a situation that he knew would be awkward and uncomfortable. Now, obviously, this is a carefully orchestrated thing with advisors and agents and people, you know, telling him when he should do it. I think the Sunday night thing was, you know, from a media standpoint, was fairly brilliant in the sense that, you know, it kind of caught people off guard, even though obviously a lot of media folks were sort of circling around the story. And you and I know what, you know, what was going on, and we were aware of certain things. So it was going to break in the next day or two if it didn't happen Sunday night. They kind of pushed the timetable up. It happened. But it's beyond all that stuff. You know, he seems like a strong-willed kid. He's obviously been through incredible heartache that the two of us can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. So he's got a tough skin. He knows that he's faced tougher things than this before with his family members, et cetera. So, I don't worry about him being able to handle this stuff. I'm very proud of the fact that he faced this before. He faced, you know, he jumped on an NFL roster, and he knows it's going to be a tough swim for him. But I like his chances of carving out something of a career in the NFL, even if he's never a great player.
The most interesting thing about Michael Sam this year to me is he's SEC Defensive Player of the Year, unanimous All-American, all this. And I had a thought, really, even while that was happening, that NFL teams seem certainly to agree with. He wasn't the best defensive end on this team. is Coney Ealy a guy that keeps up this first-round run Missouri's had the last few years?
Yeah, and I mean, boy, I'm a big Marcus Golden fan. We can talk about him next year, too. I mean, so, you know, is he the third best defensive end on the team? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, Coney Ealy, I mean, I think the Indiana game was the first time that I sort of noticed, like, whoa, this guy has something, you know, something there. And it took me a little while, but, you know, you watched him in matchups with, you know, what I think are future top 10 picks and Jake Matthews and Greg Robinson, hold his own. Did he, you know, maybe give away a little bit in the fourth quarter of those games? Absolutely. But some flash plays that make you think, okay, he does have a little bit of Alden Smith in him. Not the same player, but the same kind of wow factor that opens your eyes and gets people noticing. I still think he can do a better job with his hands. He could probably be better against the run. Those things can come, man. If you have that variety of pass rush moves, that explosiveness, teams are going to take interest, especially with his size.
We'll stay on the defensive side of the ball, and you mentioned before we started recording here that you're a big E.J. Gaines fan. Most of what I've seen out of him may be ceiling second round, but probably a third round type kid. Is that right?
I think that's fair, yeah. I mean, I'm curious to see what he does at the combine in terms of, you know, his interviews and his workouts and stuff. And, you know, it's a interesting year for cornerbacks. As you know, watching the Super Bowl, everybody's in love with these big, tall, rangy guys, and there actually are a few of them this year. So you may see a Baptiste from Nebraska appear this year from Longwood College. You know, this kid Marcus Roberson from Florida, a little bit of a taller kid. The kid from Clemson. I mean, there are some taller cornerbacks who may be overdrafted a little bit, which could push somebody like EJ down. He's not, you know, he's not tiny, but he's not huge either. So he's kind of in that in-between range, and yet you watch him support the run. You watch him, you know, hold his own against Mike Evans and you know, Matthews and people like that. And you say there's definitely a place for him in this league. So I think that's a fair place. Mid-second to early fourth would be probably, you know, early on, that's where I figured he'd go.
Jumping over to the offensive side, Missouri's got four guys probably be drafted. Real quick, Justin Britt, you know, guy that I don't think last year at this time anybody thought he was going to be drafted, but certainly seems to probably be in line to hear his name called, right?
Yeah, I think so. I didn't love all of his tape. He got, you know, on the ground a little bit too much for me, and I didn't, you know, I haven't watched him extensively, but I think probably fifth, sixth round sounds about right for him. You know, athletic and good feet and, you know, I mean, he's interesting. I think he might be somebody that ends up getting drafted somewhere in that six-round range and probably makes the roster his first year on the right team.
The receivers, let you hit them both at the same time, Marcus Lucas, LaDainian Washington, both guys that are going to be at the combine. Those guys both also get a chance somewhere?
Yeah, I think LaDainian has the better chance of the two. I mean, you know, Marcus Lucas seems to defy his, you know, speed sort of thing. I mean, I you know, he'll get open and he'll find ways to get open. I just don't know if he'll ever be a real impact player in the league. Whereas LaDainian, you know, I know the injury slowed him down at the end of the year, but he's got a little something special there. And you can just see he's still raw and he's still developmental. But, and we're still probably talking about fifth to seventh round for probably both of those guys. But I think LaDainian has a little bit upside that may be worth kicking the tires on. And he might be a, you know, maybe not his rookie year, and maybe towards the end of his second year, you might see something, a little flash of potential greatness there.
Last guy is Henry Josey, who leaves a year early. And before we get to him as a player, my take on Henry was, listen, running backs only have so many carries in their legs. He's already had an injury. I'm not sure what Henry could have done next year. I mean, if he's a fourth-round pick this year, I think what's he going to do, run for 1,200 more yards and be a fourth-round pick next year? Is that accurate?
Yeah, low third, right, exactly. I mean, you know, his story is unbelievable, and next week is going to be huge for him in terms of the medical stuff. And really, that for me is the biggest thing of the combine, is the interviews and the medical evaluation. So, you know, there is a chance for him to at least firm up his status and at least prove to people, yes, this knee is a bit freakish in what I've gone through, but I could still play in this league. And you're right. I mean, running backs get, you know, chewed up and spat up so fast in this league that, I really can't imagine him going all that high. Look at Trey Mason. I mean, people are only talking about him like a second-round pick. He had a phenomenal season. So it's the way of, even with the game maybe changing a little bit, I think that's probably the range we're talking about with Josie.
Hey, Trey Mason had a phenomenal season just on December 7th. I mean, you don't even have to worry about the rest of the year. But we've already taken too much of your time. One more, we'll get you out of here on this. Seven guys from Missouri at the Combine this year, the most they've ever had. Is this a program that over the past 4 or 5 years now has developed a reputation, or is there such a thing as a program that develops a reputation with scouts where they might look at a kid and go, yeah, I don't know, he's a fifth, sixth-round guy, I'm not sure, but because he came from that program that's turned out a lot of guys, we're interested, or does that not happen?
That happens, absolutely. I mean, think about the reputation on the negative side for Florida wide receivers years ago. You know, nobody wanted to touch, you know, Taylor Jacobs and people like that because, you know, they'd already seen Gaffney and all these other guys sort of bust out. And then, yeah, so there's the negative side, and then there's the positive side. You look at Missouri defensive linemen recently and say, hey, there's a track record there. These guys have been good draft picks. They have been high productive guys. So, yeah, that's going to help Coney Ealy out. It may aid Michael Sam on some level, but, yeah, I think that helps with that. Plus, I've heard from scouts who say that Mizzou puts on a first-rate pro day. They take care of the scouts. They're very good about communicating with them. They give them a program up front. They tell them what they're going to do. There's no surprise. It's a first-rate facility. So those things also help attract good crowds for the pro day workout.
All right, Bill O'Brien calls you and says, you get to be my GM on draft day. Your number one overall pick is?
I may be a little bit contrarian here, but I think it's going to end up being Johnny Manziel. And I saw Bill at the Senior Bowl, but I didn't specifically ask him this. And I still think there's a long way to go, but they've got to be impressed in their interviews with him. But I think when it's all said and done, he might just be the best playmaker available. And this won't be an ownership pick. It'll be a coaching staff pick. I really think so. And wouldn't stun me. I know Blake Bortles is sort of the guy that's rising right now, and Mizzou fans will remember him from a couple years ago, but I really think that Manziel, when it's all said and done, is the guy.
Yeah, I remember Blake Bortles from a couple years ago, and I'm just going to tell you, Blake Bortles is the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. I got to quit watching because I don't understand it.
His girlfriend would be the number one pick in the girlfriend draft. Because
excellent point.
Special. But beyond that, I'm with you. Even though he took a big step this year and beat some good teams, some good quarterbacks, I'm still, like you, a little suspicious.
All right, Eric. I appreciate the time, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Eric Edholm, NFL writer, shutdowncorner.com. Unfortunately, this is not a video podcast. So if you are curious about what Eric Edholm said about Blake Bortles' girlfriend, you know, just Google is your friend, my friend. Blake Bortles' girlfriend. It will entertain you for just a couple of minutes anyway. All right, we're going to turn in a different direction now, and we're going to talk a little Missouri Tiger basketball, and we're going to welcome in Jarrett Sutton, who spent some time on the Mizzou Arena floor just a couple years back. Jarrett, how you doing, man?
I'm great, Gabe. How are you?
Not too bad. And you get to be back in Columbia for this one. Both coaches that you played for in college, huh?
Yeah, it's like a surreal feeling. I was at the game last year, and that was kind of a awkward moment for me. It was so different because Coach Anderson, obviously, with the sidelines changing, Coach A was in the same coach's box that he was in during my first 3 years. So it was a weird feeling. And obviously, I was sitting behind the Mizzou bench last year, and we were able to get the win. And obviously, with Lawrence still being there, and obviously how great a relationship me and him had with Coach A. That was kind of a special night. And then tonight, I'm anxious to see kind of how I feel, if it's like I've gotten past that first year kind of awkwardness. And, obviously a big game for both teams, first and foremost, a game we need at the start of a three-game home stretch. And, I know our guys will be ready to go, but I know they'll be ready to go as well.
All right, now I'm not going to make you comment on this unless you just really want to, but you mentioned the awkwardness. Personally, for me, the one thing I'm rooting for out of this game is that if something like last year happens, Haith and Anderson actually come together at midcourt and we get to see like what the end result of that is. That's just me.
It's funny you say that because from my seat last year, I couldn't see anything of what took place at the end of the game. All I saw at the end, when I left the arena was, you know, all the tweets and everybody talking about it and all over radio. And I never had really seen it, but I obviously have seen the video since then. And, you know, both of them have commented, you know, about how they're both competitors. So, you know, I think, you know, every game they're competitive, but this one obviously means a lot to both schools. And I think, you know, from a basketball standpoint and, you know, the talk of Arkansas and Missouri being the new rivalry and here in year two of the SEC, I think there's more to this game. It's that game that both sides want.
Where do you think this goes as a rivalry? I mean, listen, you're a Kansas City guy. It's not going to replace Kansas. Nothing's going to replace that exactly. But can this one be pretty good?
You know, you're right. It's nothing is going to touch that Kansas rivalry. You know, that was just so special, and hopefully one day that'll come back. But you know, I think it has a chance to be a good rivalry, just for the sure fact of, you know, the history with Coach A and you know, obviously the first two games of the year, there's some drama behind it last year. But I think, you know, just the direction of where SEC basketball goes, I think plays a big part in that. You know, with the Big 12 in basketball, you know, when we were in that conference, the Big 12 was so competitive, and you know, there were so many different rivalries. And you know, when we play K-State, it's a big game. And when we go to Hilton, it's a big game. You know, every game was a big game. And now that we've made this transition to the SEC, you know, there isn't that game on the schedule where you're like, oh, man, this is a big, big rivalry game. There just isn't that game yet. And I know that this game against Arkansas and this series against Arkansas is trying to take place. But, you know, with right now where the SEC is in basketball, it's obviously, you know, it's no secret. It's struggling. I can't even figure out the conference this year. It's just kind of, you know, I know Kentucky and Florida are kind of taking over the ranks. But, you know, you just want this conference to get to where hopefully Big 12 basketball was when I was there. And it was so special because, you know, my senior year, we're selling out, you know, every game. And you just want to see that for the entire conference because that makes every game competitive and that brings out those rivalries.
Does that make a difference when you're on the floor? Because, listen, you read it all, Missouri fans, and I think it's been going on for years, but how come we can't get more people in the stands? You know, I mean, when you're playing a game, is that something you notice?
Absolutely. You know, and the funny thing is I noticed it a lot, you know, when I was playing, and you know, you lose a couple games or and obviously I know that there's that factor of, you know, it's Columbia and you got, you know, season ticket holders that are in Kansas City and St. Louis, and on a Tuesday or Wednesday night, it's a weeknight, and, you know, their work schedules don't permit it, and traffic and 6 o'clock games. Like, you know, tonight's game, I know there's some questions about the crowd because it's a 6 o'clock tip, and then with the weather in mid-Missouri, all those things play a factor, but you do notice it as a player because, you know, you know how big, you know, Mizzou football is to fans, and from a basketball standpoint, you know, I want it to be like that. Just because I remember, you know, going to Hearns, you know, in the sixth grade and seeing how loud Hearns got, and seeing the passion for basketball. And I just, you don't want that to ever leave. And I felt like my class, I thought we were so fortunate to have a group of guys together for 4 years. And our fans, you know, got to know us and got to really get behind us, and we got to get behind them. So it was just a give and take with the fans and us, and we just appreciated, you know, when they sell out and it was loud, and you know, we're on the defensive end and our crowd's going crazy. You feed off that energy; it gives you an extra step. It really does, especially in the college game. So I think it does play a factor, and you know, I think our fans are great, and I hope it continues.
Do you still keep in touch with pretty much all the guys on that team from a couple years ago? You know, I know obviously Marcus and Lawrence and Ricardo are all overseas, and I guess Kimmy is now too.
Yeah, I keep in touch with Kimmy and Lawrence quite a bit. We probably chat every week. You know, we're all busy, but, you know, we definitely shoot text messages to each other and kind of catch up with how everybody's doing. And, you know, with Lawrence and Kimmy getting engaged and, you know, kind of knowing that, you know, they'll be a part of my wedding and I'll be a part of their wedding. And, you know, we've became so close, and, you know, I keep in touch with Marcus as well. And he's doing well. And Ricardo, and keeping in touch with him and Safford and all these guys, it's special. And, you know, I think where, you know, college basketball is with, you know, seeing the amount of transfers, I wish kids realized how cool it is to be done playing and know that you played with a group of guys for 4 years. and you're brothers. I mean, you really are. And you know, anything in life, you kind of share with them. And, you know, Kimmy was playing in Italy, and now he's in France. And I felt honored that he called me to kind of chat with me about it and kind of see how, you know, he was doing and kind of get my thoughts. It was great. So there's a bond there, and definitely keep in touch with everybody, and everybody's doing well and continuing their careers.
Talking with former Mizzou Tiger Jared Sutton, and you know, you mentioned those four or five guys that you played with are playing pro ball and getting a paycheck. Now, they all told me when you guys were here, hey, Jared's the best shooter on the team. So I want to know, man, in practice, like you line up, you and Kimmy and Marcus, and you just line up and have a 3-point shooting contest. Do you beat them?
You know, I'm a confident guy. I'm going to say yes, but gosh, let's be honest here. I mean, Marcus Dimon and Kim English, two of the best 3-point shooters in Mizzou history, and hit some big time 3-point shots in their careers. So it's tough to for the level of competition, but you know, we used to have some fun with that. I mean, we'd be competitive, and even in practice. You know, if they were guarding me, I hit a couple shots, man, they'd get ticked off. I'd be the same way. So, you know, we had some shooters, and you know, throw Mike Dixon in there too. My gosh, we had some guys that could shoot the three, and you know, it was just a fun to be kind of with them. I think that's why I could shoot the ball well. I'd stay after practice and shoot with those guys, and just kind of saw how many makes they'd have, and just try to kind of be at their level.
As far as this Missouri team goes, anybody follows you on Twitter knows how closely you follow them. You mentioned all those guys that could shoot the basketball. Did you play with anybody who for a 6-7-8 game stretch was as locked in as Jabari Brown has been here this last month or so?
Man, it's funny you said that. I was talking to Coach Haith about that this morning. I straight up asked him because I've never seen anything like it. And man, they're there for a while. It just was like, my gosh, I don't think the guy's going to miss. I mean, it was amazing. The rim just was huge to him. But you know, I don't think Kimmy or Marcus ever went on a stretch like he went on. I know it was close. I think Marcus was up around, like, I think six, you know, consecutive games over 20 points, or he had the most consecutive games over 3 points, you know, with the three threes or more made. And I know Jabari was competing with that, but man, he's just been on fire, and I'm proud of him because, you know, when Jabari transferred to Mizzou, it was our senior year when he got here. He was redshirting and he was practicing with us, so I practiced. We were on scout team together, and to see where he's come from that point, and even the first couple practices where, you know, he was homesick, you could tell he's really quiet, he was shy, and you just didn't really know how he was gonna, you know, fit in, and you know, now where he's at, and you know, I saw him this summer at Kimmy's camp, and you know, he comes up and shakes my hand, and really interested in what I'm doing, and smiling, and he's just grown so much as a person, and his game has shown from that. I think he's confident, you know, and it's good to see that because, you know, when Kimmy and Marcus were here, Jabari was looking up to them and seeing how they interacted with their teammates and seeing how hard they work and seeing how they, you know, were treated in the community and how they approached academics. And now Jabari is at that level. So you hope that our young guys like J3 and a lot of our, even Deuce, you know, our transfers that are coming in, you hope they can see that too. Mizzou's a special place. It's a special program. I know we still talk about how much it means to us and how much right now, you know, even when we lose games, it affects us. You know, we want to see the program do well. And it's a special place, and I'm just glad to see Jabari come so far.
Well, as good as he's been, he still hasn't had 2.5 minutes like Marcus had against KU. So
no,
he's
no
still
shot.
Got that.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But, you know, I know, hey, you were a guard. Everybody says guard play takes you a long way. I'm not asking you to be critical of any individual player on this team, but you watch this team. Is it possible to be like an NCAA tournament team or a team with any chance of doing anything in the NCAA tournament when you're having games where you get like 4 points out of anybody in the front court?
Yeah, you know, you got to have production from the front court, and they just got to give you something. That's all. That's what I would say. You know, you don't have to ask them to go out and get you 20-10. You know, you just got to have them be productive in some way. Even, you know, I would say even if that's just doing things defensively, if that's getting defensive rebounds or tipping basketballs. You know, you look at a guy like Steve Moore that played with us. You know, Steve came in and he was productive with his minutes. He did things to help us. That might not have been points, or maybe it was you know, he'd chip in 8 points and have 2 rebounds, but he took 4 charges. You know, he did things to help our team and the minutes he played. And I think with us, you know, you just need a couple of guys to step into that role. You know, I think you're right. You can't do it with 3 guys. You need some other help. And, you know, you've seen signs of it. You know, I think, you know, with J3, he's coming along. You got to remember he's a freshman. And, you know, I think I keep saying this is just such great experience for him that, you know, that can take him, you know, farther if he stays with it. But, you know, you need guys to step into those roles. And when you talk about the NCAA tournament, you know, you got to be at your best when you go into the tournament. You got to be firing on all cylinders. You got to have guys be in those roles come, you know, SEC tournament time. And so the time is now. You know, it's February. You know, this year has gone fast. And you need guys to get into those roles and really try to give you productive minutes, whether that's playing 2 minutes or playing 18 minutes. You got to be productive with your minutes and give the team something. And that's going to equate to us getting these wins to make the tournament.
Just 2 or 3 more quick ones for you on the way out the door. It would have been logical to ask this one first, but last I knew, you were headed out to California. For those who don't know what you're doing, tell everybody what you're doing these days.
I'm actually working for the Golden State Warriors. I'm in the D League. I'm with the Santa Cruz Warriors, and I'm in basketball operations. I work in the front office and help our coaching staff out. We work a lot with player personnel around the D League and do a lot of player evaluation and scouting reports. And it's been great. It's my first year. It's my first year now in basketball and not being a player. So it's been an adjustment to kind of switch gears and get into the personnel side. But it's been great. I've enjoyed every second of it. It's been a great experience. And hopefully one day, you know, be able to come back to Mizzou. This is a special place with special people. And such a great town, great college town, with great fans and great school. So it's going well, though. I enjoy it.
Now, tonight's game, I'm not even going to ask you who's going to win because I know what you're going to tell me. I know you can tell me Missouri's going to win. So I'm just going to ask you, by how much is Missouri going to win?
I'm going to say 15. I'm going to say we pull away, hit some free throws down the stretch.
All right. And then last one, and I don't want to put you on the spot with this one, but we started this podcast talking about Michael Sam with a guy that covers the NFL. And I just want to ask you, as a Mizzou alum, as a Mizzou athlete, and I don't know whether or not you knew Michael when you were here, what's been your reaction just watching this whole thing all week?
Oh, I think Coach Hayes said it best in the interview he did a couple of days ago, where he said he's walking around with his head held high. And for me, being in California, I was out in California when this news broke and saw it. And just to hear about him, you know, telling his teammates at the beginning of the season and how special a group that football team was, not just by the year they had on the field, but what they were off the field. I mean, my gosh, you're talking, you know, it's not like a basketball team when you got 10, 12 guys keeping a secret. You got a lot of guys in that locker room that had so much respect for their teammate. I just thought I couldn't have been more proud. And then to hear Coach Pinkel talk about, you know, kind of their values as a team, and that's kind of spread through the athletic department. And it's just so cool to see Mizzou in that stage and just Michael, the courage and strength he had to kind of come out now right before the draft, and knowing how difficult that probably was. Couldn't be more proud. Knew Michael personally before he was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, and he's just a great kid. Just so nice and polite and respectful, and just a lot of personality. And I was so happy for him and what he did on the field, because I know how hard he worked. And I remember talking to a lot of football guys that said he's gonna be really good one day. And this was back when, you know, when I was here, and to see where he's come. And you know, knowing, you know, that he had this secret, and that he kind of came out with it. And you know, he, like you said, you know, he's a African-American football player. You know, this shouldn't be a big deal. And he's such an inspiration to, I think, so many people in our society. And proud of him, proud of the way Mizzou handled it, and proud of the football team as well.
All right, Jared, appreciate you taking the time, man. We've already taken up enough of your day, but look forward to maybe bumping into you tonight at Mizzou Arena.
All right, Gabe. Thanks so much.
All right, have a good one. Jared Sutton, former Missouri basketball player, giving us his take on this year's team, some memories from past teams, and you know, weighing in on a guy he knew now being the biggest story in at least American sports. It has been quite a week You know, there was a time where we probably thought Mike Anderson coming back to Mizzou Arena again was going to be the biggest story of the week. It isn't, but it is tonight. Missouri-Arkansas, 6 o'clock tip-off. For anyone who hasn't seen and hopefully happens to listen to this before 6 o'clock, game no longer on ESPN2. It is on ESPN. We will have full coverage on Power Mizzou, and we'll be back next week on the podcast.